Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 7th of April. I hope you had a beautiful weekend. It's a snowy, rainy day throughout most of our listening area. If you are escaping that type of weather, then good for you. But, it, you know, it's spring in upstate New York. So that's what and other regions that we serve. So we come to you on this morning with a lot to talk about and a lot to figure out and a lot to kvetch about, and we will do all of that this morning. And I, we'll figure out a path forward as we, I just mean for the show, not totally.
Oh, that's good to hear.
as we come into discussing the matters of the day. Let me remind you that you can be a part of the program, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I will say, in general, we've noticed a uptick in letters from listeners, and we're going to make a little extra time for those this morning and hope that if you would like to write to us, you can certainly do that, and we would like to hear from you and hear what is on your mind in regards to what is on the country's mind at large. Let me introduce the group to you. We go to Senior Fellow at the Bard Center for Civic Engagement, Jim Ketterer. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. I just want to say that this weekend I played at the UAlbany Jazz Festival that was in honor of Bill McCann, who's now at WAMC as well, doing jazz. 40th anniversary of doing his jazz show.
Yeah,
they had all kinds of great bands. My band played, and it was a great event to celebrate that. I also want to say that Nathan from WAMC was doing sound for the stage that we played on, and he did a very good job, made us sound good. So thank you very much, Nathan.
Yeah, he's the absolute best.
Yeah,
and a jazz guy himself. And I will say, we are very lucky to have him and very lucky to have such great jazz musicians in our region that were able to come in and do such a wonderful event.
Yeah, and Bill does a great job of just bringing that community together on a weekly basis, and now he's going to be doing it for WAMC as well.
Bill was with us last week, and it's just a pip. I'm glad he's with us. We miss Tim Coakley.
Yeah,
horribly, who retired, and Bill is taken over the show, but we love having Bill, and we missed him, and but glad audiences have a place to go for good jazz. So
one quick note too: when I was in Egypt the last time, working at the American University in Cairo, Bill came to Egypt, and he spent a good amount of time there, lecturing to some classes and also interviewing lots of Egyptian jazz musicians, music producers, and other things, and bringing those interviews back here to the Albany area. So it was a little more jazz diplomacy from Bill McCann.
Very good. Well, glad you had a good weekend. Thank you for sharing that. Good stuff to take advantage of this weekend. Libby Post joins us, political consultant and lobbyist. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning. I went to school with Bill.
Yes.
McCann at the university.
That's right.
We were in student association together, and he was always a nice guy, you know, like back in that, this was 50 years ago. Well, 40, I'll say.
Well, his 40th anniversary.
Yeah, I don't want to age myself too much. It was 40 years ago. And, you know, and he was, you know, this was like all kinds of music was coming around, you know, different kinds of music. And he was such a jazz stalwart. And to look at Bill, you wouldn't think it. But, you know, he really, you know, he's a big Irish guy, sort of like Joe.
Yeah.
But he really does have this
got a love of
this
the music.
Wonderful love of the music, and he's a really good guy, and I'll be seeing him probably at the Alumni Awards dinner in a couple of weeks. And, you know, so the weekend was political, you know, lots of events, and I didn't go to one of the rallies, but I did watch all the stuff going on.
Yeah, it was was quite a weekend for that, and in so many communities, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. We go to Mike Spain, former Times Union associate editor. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here, and I'm really, and I excuse the pun, I am jazzed to hear everyone excited talking about something so positive and so just uplifting. And we'll end that soon.
That's right. I think people will often write in and say, "I wish you just talked about good stuff." But if we did that, you'd be
bored.
Mad. You'd be bored. That's right. You wouldn't want that either.
Just listen to jazz. That's good.
That's right. You can do that after this conversation.
And support live music in the area.
And we have such wonderful. I mean, we have such wonderful musicians, and we have such wonderful opportunities in this. Bill also has a place for jazz, which is coming up. They have their event coming up. So it's Jazz Appreciation Month. So not only with jazz, but live performances
and really
good stuff. I did the Chris Hayes event at the Bardavon on Saturday night. We had a great crowd. It was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. Fun in the sense of it was very cathartic, I think. And we talked a lot about what was going on. Chris is a pro and the best, very funny. And I think everybody enjoyed themselves. The crowd, I would say, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, but 80 to 90% of them came right from rallies. So they were wet and a little bitter, but we won them over, I think, and we all had a really, really good time, or as much time as you as good a time as you can have when you're talking about these issues. But it was good, so I just want to thank everyone from the Bardavon, who their crew is fantastic. We were talking about Nate, Nate is fantastic, but what a great group they have.
That's a great venue.
Just the best people and so wonderful and warm and welcoming. And then, of course, working with Oblong Books as always, and Helen Sislowski and her crew and Susanna. And just it was really amazing. And so we had a very, very good time.
And that's going to be a book show, isn't it?
Thank you, Mike. You actually hit on what I was actually going to talk about. Yes. The book show that we taped on that night will be produced this week, and it will air next Tuesday for the first time. Tuesday the 15th at 3:00, and then Thursday at 8:30 p.m. and available online right after that Tuesday broadcast. So you have the chance to hear it and to hear about his book, The Siren's Call, which is about our attention economy. And it's really fascinating stuff, very relevant, and I think you will enjoy it. So, all right, let's go to what is making news this week, and it's really the same stuff that was making news last week. A lot of it is very similar. But I want to first, we're going to do it in this way, since the Dow doesn't open, the stock market doesn't open until about 9:30. I thought we'd just spend the first few moments of our program talking about the hands-off rallies that took place across this country on Saturday. Demonstrators in D.C. and other cities across the country. And as I said, I was driving down from Washington County and going through town after town. And there was some form of rally in almost every town that I went through, and some of them were just huge. And I'm sure by now most of you have seen the pictures of some of the largest rallies, whether they be in New York or in Washington or in San Francisco, of just how big the rallies got. Tens of thousands of people crowded in front of the Washington Monument and in cities across the nation on Saturday to protest President Donald Trump and top advisor Elon Musk's dismantling of federal agencies, imposition of sweeping tariffs, and what demonstrators called the circumvention of due process. Organizers said at least 1,300 hands-off rallies were planned by more than 150 groups in all 50 states. Photos and videos on social media showed throngs gathered in public squares or marching through the streets from Boston to Los Angeles. Rallygoers dressed in Statue of Liberty costumes waved anti-Trump flags and had their canines wear dogs against Doge collars. In the freezing rain in Providence, Rhode Island, they carried signs decrying the administration's deportation efforts. Under sunny skies in Atlanta, home to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they blasted the defunding of public health, which I think we're going to focus on and talk about a little bit Later on in the program, on a beach in San Francisco, they formed a human banner to send a message to the president, hands off democracy. In Washington, the crowd swelled as far as the eye could see from all sides of the stage on the National Mall. No moral person wants an economy-crashing dictator who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing, said Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, weighing into the Trump administration for the stock market downturn, attacks on law firms, and close relations with international dictators. Organizers said they hoped Saturday's events would be the largest Trump protest since he returned to office in January. I believe it seems they were. In their permit application to the National Park Service, rally organizers in D.C. said they anticipated crowds of 10,000. By Friday night, though, the organizers said they expected at least 20,000. Saturday afternoon, they were estimating the crowd was five times as big as they predicted. But I know people will argue about crowd size, but you look at any of those pictures, mm-hmm. and you can tell a lot of people there. A lot of people all over who were at these rallies. The White House postponed spring garden tours scheduled for Saturday because of the potential size of the event. Police began closing streets around the National Mall on Saturday afternoon as the crowd swelled beyond the figures predicted by organizers. Political protesting was a new experience for Jack Behrens, a 28-year-old livestock farmer from New York's Hudson Valley. Hello, Jack. She drove down at 4:30 a.m. to be there. She's never been particularly political, but seeing Musk mimic a Nazi salute and seeing Trump's rhetoric sway her mom into fearing immigrants spurred her to action. I wanted to be at the heart of it, and D.C. is definitely the heart of it, she said. I really hate the billionaires and the rich are in control of our political system. That is not what this country was founded on. Give you some idea, that from the Washington Post, of the mood of the room as of Saturday as protests took place, rallies, peaceful rallies taking place across this country. Jim.
Yeah, I think it's certainly it's a noteworthy event, and it's an important day because not because it turns into immediate political action in terms of specific policies, but I think there is a cumulative effect to these kinds of protests, and there will have to be more as this year goes on. And I anticipate that there will be more and more, and that people who weren't at the protests this Saturday, who support the cause in general, I think will want to be there. And you'll see the protests grow and grow, especially as the weather gets warmer and nicer, hopefully. At the same time, just one note of caution, too. I just want to say, too, that combining these protests with the same week where you had Cory Booker giving his 25-hour mm-hmm. filibuster, which I know some people thought was just purely performative, but I think that also has kind of a crystallizing effect, gives people the sense that it is possible to stand up and speak out and continue to do so. And, you know, though it still needs more policy action, there's still a positive effect. The cautionary note is that in some of the protest spots, there were MAGA supporters who showed up specifically to try to lure protesters into creating violent situations. As far as I know, that did not happen. But I anticipate that this will continue to happen. You'll have these dueling protests. You'll have people who are seeking to cause trouble within the protests. I also saw a comment from the president on one of the social media platforms where he said, among other things, it's a disgrace and it has to stop. And I think people need to take those words seriously. And people are going to have to continue to turn out. I think they're also going to have to be courageous. It's going to get wild.
Libby?
Well, you know, nobody stormed the Capitol. Nobody broke a window.
Yeah.
Nobody hurt a cop. Nobody, you know, got violent. So I guess that's what he wants to have stop. He likes the violence. He likes the mayhem. So,
yeah.
You know.
Evidently.
But that's not going to happen. I mean, you know, our folks understand what peaceful protest means, and hopefully it will stay that way. You know, it was great to watch on the news all the protests. We couldn't go for physical health reasons, because if I had gone, I wouldn't be here today because I wouldn't be able to move. So, you know, but people need to do what they can do where they can do it, right? So I'm here blabbering my mouth off. I go online. I do what I need to do. But as more people can get out onto the streets peacefully and protest, the better we are. Now, he will bluster, right? But there were maybe 100,000, if not more, people in Washington, D.C., and they did not send out the army. They did not do any of the things that he has always threatened to do because they're under, you know, they're under the microscope now on the abridgment of civil rights in this country with just rounding people up like the Gestapo. I mean, ICE equals Gestapo in this country. We have to recognize that and be clear about that. You know, so it's going to be, I think we have to keep the pressure on. I think, you know, what's going on is, you know, I'm as angry about it as anybody else is, but I can't, like, my hair can't be on fire all the time. You know, it's not good for anybody for one's hair to be on fire all the time. But what's important is to focus. Well, some of us who still have hair, Mike. It's important to...
Duly noted.
Yes, it's important to stay focused and keep working and speaking out and doing what any individual can do. And that's really the bottom line here. And, you know, we were joking before, 9:30, well, the market is open now. We'll see. You know, I stopped getting the paper statements and I now have it all electronically and it's on my phone and I went looking. This weekend, and we lost $7,000 or $8,000 in our retirement funds. I mean, this is no joke. And this weekend, we went to see the Lehman Trilogy at Cap Rep, yeah, which has closed, and the play is over. And it really just sort of put it all out there for how these mega banks get started, how they don't care. There's no values in them. It's just about making money. And then what happens? And it was a 3-hour play and it felt like 15 minutes. It was really, really very well done. And I think it was Maggie Mancinelli Cahill's last directing job before she retires. And she did a stellar job.
Yeah, we had the cast on a while ago.
It was great.
Kevin McGuire and the group. Good, really good stuff.
Yeah.
Mike Spain, your thoughts?
Real quickly, I think it's important to note that thousands came out in Albany. The mm-hmm. number is sort of in dispute, but it was a healthy crowd that stood in the pouring, cold, lousy rain. And that's demonstrative of people's determination to make a point. And I agree with Jim. I think that this was inspired, you know, elevated. It already was in the works, but it was elevated by Cory Booker's, I think, courageous mm-hmm. Effort to just say we have to do something. We have to say what's going on isn't right. And that, I think, inspired a lot of people. I think there's a groundswell. What is interesting to me is that you had people like farmers. You had senior citizens worried about Social Security and Medicare. You had people protesting the lack of due process and the rounding up of immigrants and throwing them into a hellhole in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. And you have all kinds of people coming together. And that is the beginning of a very, very strong effort to counter.
All kinds of people getting together, and I think that's right, Mike. They're much like the crowd sizes and getting a firm number, nor do we know exactly what the demographic makeup of the group was. But I think the administration and the right-wing media basically put it aside and said that this is Democrats and liberals belly aching. The reporting that I saw really healthy numbers mm-hmm. of Republicans, conservatives, independents who were also in the mix. And were also expressing their very real fear and concern as to what's going on. Were there more Democrats than anyone else? Sure.
Who knows? Right.
But
yeah.
But there was. I don't think that can then. You cannot say that it was an all Democratic protest. Right.
Well, just as a little update, the market is now open.
Yes, it is.
Okay. The Dow is down 3.23%. The S&P is down 3.55%, and NASDAQ is down 4.09%. And Tesla is down 27.85%. So I guess some people are taking their angst out on the market in that way,
their
because
fear.
We know what's going on in the Tesla world. But yeah, there were Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, because Republicans and conservatives are also concerned about the fate of the earth, right? And health. Now, what's going on, and I know we'll talk about this, but a measles outbreak in West Texas, where people have already died unnecessarily because there's a vaccination, folks. And if you vaccinate your kids, they won't get the measles. But, you know, we have an administration with the head of HHS who doesn't believe in vaccinations. And he said this weekend, oh, they should get vaccinated. But his overarching rhetoric has been vaccines are bad. And this is what happens. I've been saying this all along. People are going to die. Children are dying. Women are bleeding out in parking lots. You're going to see more people dying. And this administration, their stock and trade is cruelty, and they don't care.
I want to just, if I can, Joe, if time, circle back to the demographics of who turned out for the rallies. And I think for sure we don't know exactly what they are. But I'm hopeful that these rallies and more that will come will be one of the things that inspires more and more people to turn out to vote. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, continue to think that really the name of the game is to get turnout, particularly of one's ardent supporters. And I think there's very, very, very few people who can be convinced after 10 years of seeing Donald Trump in action that they should change their minds. Now, I have friends, good friends, people I deeply respect, who disagree with me and say that there really is some swing voters who can be swung. I don't think so at this point. I think we live in a polarized political situation. So the key, and this is what Trump has done well, he mobilizes his base. He keeps them in a state of constant kind of, you know, upsetness and inspiration to turn out, and they do turn out. And the Democrats need to be able to do the same thing. So I'm hoping that the rallies will get people to take seriously the elections that are coming up this November and the primaries, et cetera, and continue that on to the 2026 elections.
People need to get out. Democrats routinely do not vote in off-year elections, and this is how the right took over school boards and library boards and town boards, and those people have just, you know, moved their way on up, and the Matt Gaetzes of the world and those kinds of folks. And we have to vote in off-year elections. It's not just the D.C. elections that are important. These local elections are very important.
More than ever.
Right, right. We have a mayor's race in Albany. The whole city council's up. You know, we've got city council races in Schenectady. It's important. It's just important for people to get out and vote.
We will take a break. When we come back, we'll get to letters from listeners and move on to other topics after that. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this. I listened to this album all weekend. This is really great stuff. Elton John, Brandi Carlile, new album of duets. Do You Believe in Angels? They were on SNL, Saturday Night Live, on Saturday night. and were just fantastic. And the album is fantastic, and it's just really great stuff. We'll be playing that as our bumper music. You can see the playlist posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. Okay, so let's go to some letters. Lisa writes to us and says, I went to a small town rally. There was a surprisingly large turnout. We had a MAGA man racing down the street in a Jeep giving us the finger. It was very threatening. Eventually, he talked to someone in the crowd and left. So,
well, it's good they're talking, honestly. I think people need to talk. And as I said before, you know, what was the people being quoted in all these stories across the country that have been in the press, they have a lot of different reasons for being there, and it brings together a lot of different people. And if mega people are showing up and talking to them, that's a good thing. I mean, I think, you know, that's where it begins, you know.
But if they're racing down the street, I assume in a vehicle, given the kinds of attacks that we've seen in other places, that is, number one, probably a violation of the speed limit and should be pulled over by the police immediately. Secondly, it is in and of itself threatening and dangerous, and it should be stopped by the authorities. If you don't stop that kind of stuff now, it's going to get worse.
Barbara writes, I attended the hands-off rally in Kingston. Despite the pouring rain, the majority of those attending were 60-plus, even a few in wheelchairs. We were peaceful, friendly, and loud. Being a 72-year-old woman taking care of my 102-year-old father, I can totally understand why so many of those my age were there, concerned about Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. At this very same spot, when I was in middle school, my family and I saw RFK Sr. when he was campaigning for the New York State Senate.
No, the United States Senate for New York State.
For New York State, yes. That's right. the Senate seat in New York, that's correct.
I remember seeing him myself as a kid when he came through Troy.
Let's see. We go to Barbara. The protest happened all over the world. The New York Times, for one, had the story on Sunday below the fold on their website with comments disabled. Hardly anything on broadcast news Sunday night. PBS, NPR, quiet, except you. Thank you for talking and telling about the protest. What is going on? Is media suppression happening? I understand Barbara's point, and it seems like this is a frequent criticism. I will say that all day Saturday, as the protests were going on, Saturday night and into Sunday morning, there was a lot of coverage.
Yeah, I don't think there was any suppression, but...
I mean, it is 2 days later. I mean, and in all due respect, there is a very rapid news cycle going on. A lot is happening.
Yes, and I understand. And I, you know, I say this because I saw so many on Sunday morning, many of the photos and the video from protests all over the country. Mm-hmm. And so the coverage was there. I understand there can always be, you know, more when we're, especially if we're out doing something. But it is, I thought that in comparison to some, there's some really good coverage of what was happening. Meanwhile, this is just the breaking news from NPR, which is shares nosedived around the world Monday as higher U.S. tariffs and a backlash from Beijing triggered massive sell-offs. Trump has defended the tariffs. You have to take medicine to fix something, he said. And as Libby mentioned, the Dow is now open. It fell over 1,200 points or more than 3% after the open and was headed to a third consecutive day of steep falls. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ fell more than 3% each, and we'll talk more about that in just a few moments. Going back to the letters. Dan says, Nero fiddled while Rome burned, Trump golfed while the stock market burned. That was this weekend. Then we go to Frank. Reportedly, 1 million-ish people are estimated to have protested Trump, Vance, Musk et al. This weekend. Particularly notable was the large protest in Washington, D.C., taking place at a time when everyone they were protesting was out of town. So now what? I'm 99 years old. I'm looking forward to seeing the end of the Trump administration. I expect some of the younger folks to pull more weight to make this happen, especially my children's generation, which deserves too much of the credit for his elevation. That from Frank.
Wow, Frank. That's amazing.
Yes. And I'm not, this isn't a diss on Frank at all.
No, no.
But his kids' generation is probably 75 to 80 years old.
It is. Yeah. It is. I think he's talking about his grandchildren and beyond. Way to go. Way to go, Frank.
So then we, let's see, we go to Blue. Coretta Scott King suggested over the weekend that we need to focus less on Trump and more on the Republican majority so they begin to feel the pressure to split from him. Also, sorry to see criticism of young people not turning out on Saturday. They have turned out for trans rights, for LGBTQ rights, for racial justice in ways that boomers have not. Rallies are our comfort zone for protest, but not the only way to resist. That from Blue. Then we go to Jason. I attended the hands-off rally in D.C. on Saturday. It was fun and inspiring. I thought it was wonderful to be in the company of like-minded folks. One of the great things I heard was, if you don't have the power you want, at least use the power that you have. Then we go to Lisa. I, too, was at the Kingston rally as well as rallies in Rhinebeck and Hudson a few weeks ago. At each rally, someone in a very loud, I'm assuming, pickup truck was driving around for several minutes. Yes, it did sound purposely threatening, and that is from Lisa. Then we go to Ray. How can even the most strongest MAGAs have any support for what is happening? This hurts all of us. I just can't imagine what their argument can be. That's a question that is being asked a lot. What is the argument? And even from people giving the benefit of the doubt. So what's the end game here?
But the surveys haven't been dramatic yet. I mean, there is some erosion of Trump's support, overall support, and he has very, very strong support from his core. And the things that are getting a lot of support are his immigration policies. And there have been stories written, I think it's in the minority, but there's been stories written that while it may be chaotic for a while, the outcome of his tariffs could be very positive. Most people don't agree with that, and it's certainly chaotic, and that's problematic in itself. But, you know, there are people who have some basis for continuing their support for him.
But, you know, the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal doesn't, which is not, you know, a liberal
no,
rag.
Owned by Rupert Murdoch,
yeah,
and we should
they are not at all supportive of the tariffs and several of the other things going on. Also, the National Review. I mean, William Buckley's former magazine has been highly critical of these things. So what effect will those conservative outlets have on overall support? I'm not sure. I think I heard a blurb this morning that Bill Ackman was saying there ought to be a 90-day freeze on the tariffs.
And he's a major Trump backer, and has been. And Ackman is saying, whoa, put on the brakes. You know, let's just hold off. Yeah.
I just want to correct something that we said. We had a letter writer who quoted Coretta Scott King saying over the weekend, Coretta Scott King passed away in 2006. And when I saw that, I was like, I don't think this is right. So I checked it, but it's 2006. So I don't know if it was another member of the King family that the letter writer was quoting or a quote that they had said in the past. I'm not sure. I just wanted to correct it so we could do away with a barrage of letters telling us that she had passed.
Right.
Yes.
You know, you're talking about people who are breaking with Trump. Joe Rogan.
Right.
Right. Joe Rogan is calling the deportations horrific, and so is Ann Coulter. They're breaking with Trump on these things. I mean, Rogan, you know, is like, you know, he criticized the administration for the removal of a gay makeup artist, so I'm glad that he's actually speaking up for the LGBT community. But you know, when those kinds of folks who have been staunchly in his corner start saying, and Rogan has a big audience.
He does.
Gigantic audience. Coulter, not as much, but still there are people who still pay attention to her. You know, it's the beginning. It's the little cracks. It's the little cracks that turn into big cracks where the water gets through.
And Rogan could reach members of his supporters that the Wall Street Journal and the National Review
probably
won't.
They won't
be
picking up the Wall Street Journal, right, but they'll hear him,
Ali says, it occurred to me that perhaps the crash is on purpose. If we're all poor, we have less agency to fight back against a dictator who wants a third term. And this is an argument that I've heard a lot over the weekend of people that said, when asked the question that I asked earlier, what's the end game? What are we trying for here? And this was brought up at the event we did on Saturday night in Poughkeepsie, where people were asking, you know, is this being done on purpose? Like, is Trump getting what he wants in the sense of to take down the stock market? I don't know the answer to that, of course, but I think it's worth putting into this, the question box.
This is what Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut is saying, too, that it's a waste of time to try to do an economic analysis of tariffs, good, bad, or in between, that it's not about the economic policy. It's not about those details. This is designed to create chaos, fear, a shrinking of the economy, and it is part and parcel of an overall authoritarian takeover. This is what Chris Murphy is saying. And he's out and about saying it lots of places in lots of different ways, and he's consistently saying it.
We go to Ross, who says, I have one question. Who is advising the president on these tariffs? There's been a lot of reporting about the tariffs and the, for want of a better term, the equation that was used to come up with the tariffs, which some organizations have said used a faulty premise in coming up with the tariffs, which actually made it four times worse than it was initially supposed to be. Obviously, no one is taking blame for that at the moment, but it is...
of course not.
But it is a... And if true, I don't know that either, but it has been suggested by several economists that that was how these numbers were arrived at. So I know that doesn't answer Ross's question, but I think it gives it a little bit of context.
There are reports that, like, the Philippines or Vietnam have approached the White House and said, we're ready to end all tariffs with the United States in exchange for the same. And administration people are saying the White House phones are ringing off the hook of foreign leaders wanting to broker one-shot deals with the Trump administration to, you know, come up with a favorable compromise regarding their country. European Union seems more combative. China seems more combative, of course. But, it seems to me that the administration may tout some of that and use it to, temper this week what they've been doing last week. Or they'll dig down. I mean, I'll be surprised if they dig down because it seems to be so disastrous on Wall Street, and it seems to be eroding their support among, major, like that Guy Ackman, who is a big hedge fund guy, coming and saying we need to put a pause on this. I cannot see a scenario where they're not going to try to save face and cite some of these negotiations with other countries and modify it and say it did what we needed. Now we got them on their knees and we'll negotiate with them. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I think he's gonna say, I'm taking away the tariffs because I solved the problem.
I created this problem.
Right. I got. And he'll say China and everybody else capitulated to him, right? But, which we all know isn't true.
With all due respect, and I'm not necessarily, agreeing with this, but there is an argument that, and some economists have said this, that if there's an all-out tariff, you know, trade war going on, it knocks us into a deep recession, the United States is probably in a very strong position to come out of that like they came out of the, you know, pandemic recession, come out of it better than everybody else. And at the end, the United States will be better and others will be worse off. And that's something that would please Trump. So, I mean, it may be that that's the goal, is to kind of, you know, burn down the house and and we'll rebuild faster than everybody else.
But can't the same be true? I mean, if Biden handed Trump a sound economy and then you tank it and then you bring it back to where it was, I mean, is that...
After causing enormous...
Right, pain.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not so much defending it, but I mean, I think there's people who, some people who see, yeah, we got them on their knees and now we'll negotiate a better deal with them. I mean, it's
right,
rhetorically, but it's the way that Trump is. It's negotiating a deal.
Right.
You know, he'd build a casino. It would start to go bankrupt. He'd build an apartment building and he wouldn't pay contractors. And he'd negotiate and they'd get pennies on the dollar. And he'd say, see, it worked in my favor. And that's, I think, a mentality. It's overly simplistic, and
I don't think
it works that way. But I think
I think that's what
some
he's
are arguing.
Try to
that's
do.
What it could be.
I think that's exactly what he's going to try to do and make himself look like the hero. And the thing is that he can't. I mean, he'll say China got on their knees and all the rest of them, but China is hitting back, right?
Mm.
Everyone else is.
But
hitting
it's causing
back.
A lot of pain within China too. I mean, it's hurting their economy.
Like our leader, their leader doesn't really care. Like Putin, like Orban, they're all autocrats. They don't really care.
But nobody wants unrest after they're in power, right?
I disagree. I think you can leverage unrest. I think that there is a political advantage in not just in this case, but if you look at the trajectory of regimes that are becoming increasingly authoritarian, there is a period in which they stoke unrest. Mm-hmm. For the very reason that it allows them to justify an extremely hard crackdown. And so this, again, doesn't have to do with economic analysis. This has to do with sheer power and exerting power and coalescing power. And so, again, I've lived and worked in some of these countries where they draw out the protesters. They inspire unrest. And then they point to it and say, you see, these people can't be trusted. They are upending a lawful state, and we're going to crack down, and we can justify it under the heading of law and order.
Well, do you think that's what's going on here?
I think we will see over a long, hot summer. I'm worried that it could be, but we're going to have to see.
And just remember, during the Vietnam War, how successful the FBI was in infiltrating the anti-war movement. And Trump's folks will try to do the same here to undermine things and make it worse so that our side looks crazy, absolutely crazy. They're nuts. They're taking to the streets. They're burning down things.
They're violent. Yeah.
Right, they're violent. You know, it was Kyle Rittenhouse that brought the gun to the demonstration where he killed somebody and got off, right? He was one of them, not one of ours.
I think what makes this, and correct me if I'm wrong, folks, but it does seem to me that what makes this so confusing is because you often get mixed messages from the administration and from the president. So initially, the president, while announcing this, talked about the negotiating process that would take place that would bring us to, quote, a better place. Then this weekend, as we saw the futures markets really start to tank and to see stocks tumbling as they are this morning, the president said, we're in this for the long haul. He sent out the entire team to say we're in this for the long haul and we're not changing anything until we're at zero. Meaning the tariffs, meaning of what they have to pay. So that is, if that's the case, I don't know. But that's the card that's being played at 10 o'clock on this Monday morning.
Right. That was the Sunday talk show guys, like the Secretary of Treasury and Commerce and Economic Advisors and stuff. That guy, Scott Bessent, the Secretary of Treasury, he was on NBC on Sunday, and he said this would be fine for Americans, quote, who have put away for years in their savings account. I don't think the day-to-day fluctuations of what's happening is going to be a problem for them, essentially, he was saying. But that ignores the reality that 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. It's a tough, tough life out there. Mm-hmm. And you don't have money socked away in savings. This is going to be a terribly tough ride.
President Trump said that the stock market would boom. And I don't know if he meant go boom or just boom.
Yeah.
But I mean, there will be some.
That's the question.
There will be some, you know. Well, I hope that there will be some stabilizing and then some people buying, you know, to take advantage of it. There'll be people make a lot of money on this.
We're desperately late for a break. My apologies for being late. We go over now to throw it over to Mike Bowen for some messages and then to our colleague Ray Graff for news. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Monday morning, the 7th of April. And just a few more letters and then we'll move on to other topics. Bill says, I agree with Jim. The Trump strategy to create chaos and encourage dissension that will be confrontation, then he can declare martial law, thus guaranteeing a third term. Then we go to Joe, who says, yes, the stock market is tumbling, but look at the price of oil also falling. My guess is that a lot of Trump's base doesn't care about the stock price or the stock market, but will cheer him if lower oil prices lead to a big drop in gas prices as gas prices fall.
Oh, we'll see.
But, you know, so many people have their retirements in one way or another connected to the stock market. You know, with the change in the way pensions worked over the last several decades, I think that so many Americans are connected to the stock market in a way that wasn't the case two generations ago.
That's right. That's right. The demise, decline of company pension plans and, in moving to like a 401k type thing.
Right.
It's hitting. I mean, the baby boomers, retirees now are looking at. You can look at the app on your phone and just watch the percentages go down, and that has to be devastating.
Shyla asks this question. Does Trump really have the leverage he thinks he has here? The tariffs have pitted the U.S. against the rest of the world. What's to stop them from building new trade deals? They don't rely on the U.S. between themselves. Like, if Trump takes his ball and goes home, won't the kids left behind find a new game to play without him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's already happening, that you already see countries approaching each other and saying this is the new reality and we need to find ways to work together. You see the current
in Canada,
the current Prime Minister of Canada, who is, running for office now, is talking about that openly, but others are as well. Also, today, I noticed that Emmanuel Macron visited Egypt. Now, Egypt is one of those places that has been a long-standing U.S. ally and second largest recipient of U.S. foreign assistance. Most of that is military, and it continues. But there was also a sizable chunk of USAID money that went there, and that's gone away because USAID has gone away. So it's not surprising to see the French, the British, others start to move into influence, as well as the Chinese and maybe the Russians. I mean, I didn't see much activity of the Russians while I was there, though they're active in other parts of the African continent. But I certainly saw increased activity on the Chinese side.
Ray writes, how can even the most strongest MAGAs have... So, did I read this letter? I think it did. This hurts all of us. I just can't imagine what their argument can be. I think I did read that, and I apologize for repeating it. Nonviolence training is going to be such an important part of planning for future rallies, says Fred. I'm sure that Trump will quietly arrange for supporters to go and try and incite violence. That will give him reason to invoke the Insurrection Act and send in the troops.
But, you know, that's a really good point. I mean, that you have to go into these subsequent rallies with really a consistent message of nonviolence. And you saw this in the civil rights movement, that that as people came under attack, there were certain elements that said, we need to fight back. And that's the natural inclination, but that's also going to lead to a catastrophe.
Yeah. The other part of this is that there were some warnings for people to turn their phones off, their cell phones off, because you can do geocaching. And you can go to a map if you've got all the technology you need. Go to a map, do a circle around an event where it's taking place, and you can pull everybody's cell phone number from there and track them. It's very Big Brother. It really is. And people need to be aware that that's something that the Republicans, anybody can do it. It's commercially available, but it's something that they can do to track, and just like, you know, you were here and it was a violent protest and you're getting arrested. We don't care if you were involved in the protest.
If anybody is at a protest and they can, and the government can, ICE can prove, and you are an immigrant whose status is, you know, maybe questionable, that could become ammunition to round you up and send
That's
you
right.
away. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to other topics. We do have many letters, but they're very similar in nature, so I want to get to other topics as we move forward on this morning. I mean, so as far as the tariffs go, I mean, we sort of have conflated the two issues about the hands-off rallies and then also the bracing for more chaos. But the Wall Street decision makers are bracing for that chaos after markets plunge. And we're certainly seeing that this morning. The financial titans who backed Trump are now dealing with the fallout from his tariffs. And this is an interesting element to it to me. They're now dealing with the fallout, and they spent the weekend surveying the damage of last week's major sell-off. There was little rest on Wall Street this weekend. There was plenty of anger, anxiety, frustration, and fear. Anger at President Trump for a brash and chaotic rollout of tariffs that erased trillions of dollars in value from the stock market in 2 days. Anxiety about the state of the private equity industry and other colossal funds with global investments. Frustration among Wall Street's elite at their sudden inability to influence the president and his advisors, and fear of what may come next. So you have this group of people who are like, I was at the inauguration like a month ago. What happened? And now the realities are hitting, and they're dealing with this. Hedge funds tallied up their losses and bragged if they only lost a little. Bankers and lawyers tore up already sparse calendars for deal making, reasoning that no chief executive would risk a big merger for public offerings soon. Major banks played out emergency scenarios to guess whether one client or another would fall in the cascading effects of an international trade war. Mike.
Yeah, isn't that really the immediate result of this chaos, that anybody who was planning to expand their business or go into a new line or invest in something going forward, that's all on hold. If you were planning to hire people up for, you know, what your business needs, you might say, well, maybe we better hold back on that. And that kind of uncertainty is reflected in the stock market, but it's all across the economy. And it's going to mean people who might have been hired won't be hired. It's going to cause a lot of nickel and dime losses all across the economy, and as that sets in, that's going to be painful. Even if you do get gas for under $3, gasoline for under $3 a gallon, and that might be celebrated. Everyone loves that. It's not going to make up for the other costs that are there and the lack of employment.
I just want to read this one line from this article in the New York Times. In conversations with the New York Times over the weekend, bankers, executives, and traders said they felt flashbacks to the 2007-2008 global financial crisis, one that took down a number of Wall Street giants. Leaving out the brutal but relatively short-lived market panic that erupted at the start of the coronavirus pandemic, this is me entering into the conversation now, that a lot of the numbers that were hearing about and seeing are often compared to the last time this happened was in 2020, which was, of course, the start of the panic. But this article making it clear that the velocity of last week's market decline, stocks fell 10% over 2 days, which looks more like what happened by the waves of selling that came as Lehman Brothers, which Libby referenced earlier, collapsed in 2008.
You have to wonder what's next? What domino is going to fall next?
The worry alone is enough.
But yeah. Is one of the bigger banks like Chase or whatever Jamie Dimon's the head of? I can't keep track of everybody. Yeah. You know, but those large banks, are they going to fall?
Just talking about it is frightening.
Yeah.
And the one line in the story that Joe's referencing, I think was in the New York Times today, is that this is all self-inflicted.
Yes. Right.
It was unnecessary.
It was. It was totally unnecessary. And it's going to be very hard for Trump to come in and say, after these banks fail, right, it's going to be hard for him to be able to wave his erstwhile magic wand and fix it, right, unless the government's going to put a lot of money in like they have in the past, like they tried to do with the – I mean, I remember the SNL bailouts. I remember all of those, and the government had to come in. I remember the auto dealer bailouts. The government had to come in. That's the role of the federal government at times. And so, you know, it's if one of these major banks fail, you know, they're talking about a recession. Folks, it's the D word that's going to happen. We're going to have a depression, not just a recession. I mean, we had a mini depression the last time around, 2008, but nobody wanted to call it that. You know, I remember on the West Wing, they said, don't call it a recession, call it a bagel.
You bananas.
Know? Yeah. So, and it is bananas. The whole thing is bananas.
But the administration is saying that this pain is necessary to fix what needs to be fixed. And so I haven't heard a clear explanation on what exactly
was broken
and needed to be fixed.
Well, and the original, I mean, originally it was fentanyl coming over the border. Right. That was the case for Canada. That was the case for Mexico. And then we cascaded into everybody else. So is that same concern what we're looking at? And as you say, there has not been a clear explanation as to where this all came from.
I think the one thing that is put forward as a justification are the consistent trade imbalances with other countries. The question, though, is, I mean, that seems to me to be just a profound misunderstanding of the ways in which international trade happens and the nature of trade with many of those countries that are on that list. And so if there are things that need to be addressed, you know, a lot of it has to do with the strength of the dollar, what specifically we buy from those countries. I mean, that's one way to fix a trade imbalance is to have Americans stop buying something that comes from that country. So say, okay, we're going to buy a lot less coffee and we're going to spend a lot more for the coffee that we do buy, as an example. You know, the United States is not a place where we can grow a lot of coffee. It's just not going to happen. And so... So if you really want to make people angry, including me, tell them that they can't have coffee.
I will say, I just want to, real quick, we got this from
a couple of listeners.
In a minor way.
Okay, fine.
Just about the term geocaching.
Yeah.
That actually what you're thinking of is geolocation, which is a fun GPS-based treasure hunt. The devices are called Stingrays, and the Biden administration used them, not just Republicans. It's a tool of the state, not a party.
Well, my vendor calls it geocaching, so I'll go with that.
All right.
Okay.
All right. We have another letter here, I believe, from... I think you should look to the Cultural Revolution in China for parallels to the chaos that's happening today, writes Lee, in markets and society. I've been thinking this for the last 2 months. Finally, Friedman and the Times mentioned this. This from Lee. We will note that the Dow is down, but only slightly, and they're saying that the markets are rebounding.
Right. It was down 3.5%. Now it's only down close to 1. You know, a little over 1. That's rebounding.
We'll see what happens in another hour, right?
And that, yeah. Where this it's too early to tell.
Yeah. We'll see what else happens here and for the rest of this day.
Well, okay. So it's true, though. The Dow is now only down 1.3, S&P less than 1%, 0.77, and NASDAQ 0.14. So,
yeah.
Okay. So we all don't have to go home and, like, you know, scream at our computers tonight when we look at our retirement accounts.
Well, as of 10:30.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
You never know
what
will happen. We've got a big day ahead.
It's a long day.
Right.
There's a lot of hours in this day ahead of ours, so we'll do our best to keep track of it for you, and of course we'll be monitoring it throughout the day.
I mean, I know that this is very paranoid of me, but you have to wonder, is there something that somebody like the Trump administration can do to mess with all of this and make us think the market's rebounding? Is that a possibility?
The headline's already changed on CNN.
I know.
Global markets are struggling.
Right.
You know,
right.
Not rebounding,
right? Is it, you know, is Adam Smith's invisible hand gone? I don't know. This is why I didn't take economics, other than the math. But
I didn't either, but it just seems to me that volatile is the word.
Yeah.
And it's up and down, and there's a lot of unknowns, and
yeah,
it's going to work.
Right.
It's going to work its way out the way it works its way out, and we're just along for the ride.
Right, and what I just said, those numbers just changed.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, Mike's absolutely right. The headline from on CNN originally was stock markets
rebounding.
Plunge, and then it went to their rebounding, and then they went to global instability, and now it's huge swings on Wall Street.
Right.
So
that's a big headline.
These are very a lot going on here, and again, that's just within 5 minutes. So
and that's just CNN.
And
one
that's
can
just
imagine
CNN.
What other outlets
oh,
are saying.
Oh, that's a great point.
It's
absolutely.
It's important to remember too. If the stock market were to close today up a little bit. It's after a whole week of major, major losses. People are not
right.
ahead. They're just the bleeding is temporarily stopped, and that's the pain.
All right, let's go. We only have a couple of moments, so we'll start this story and probably talk about it on the other side of the break. And that is, worries are growing over risks to Americans as Trump cuts health and safety agencies. And this is a story that has been going on for a couple of weeks, although in its totality, when you look at the various services that are being cut, is concerning. The task of finding those bacteria, I missed this, my apologies, bacteria that has not been detected yet, perhaps E. coli, which is linked with food poisoning, or more of the Chronobacter that led to infant illnesses, sparked a nationwide shortage of infant formula in 2022, and led to major reforms at the FDA. The task of finding those bacteria rests on FDA inspectors, whose jobs have been mostly preserved amid the Trump administration's sweeping cuts to the federal government. But the people who help support those inspections have not fared as well. More than 150 people in the FDA's Office of Inspections and Investigations, the staff responsible for purchasing supplies, managing trips, and coordinating other administrative functions, were laid off last week, according to multiple federal officials. So were staff dedicated to food safety policies and regulations, including an entire office that partnered with foreign countries to handle food-related disease outbreaks. Meanwhile, the FDA's top food safety official, a position created after the infant formula crisis, resigned, citing indiscriminate staffing cuts to the office. The cuts tee up quote, the next infant formula crisis waiting to happen, said one current FDA official. The FDA, which last week laid off its entire media affairs team, did not respond to a request for comment. The Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the FDA, did not respond to a request for comment. A White House spokesman said the FDA and other health officials and agencies underperformed during the COVID-19 pandemic, and that recent staffing changes were intended to make the agencies more, quote, nimble and strategic. Across the government, President Trump and his allies have sliced billions of dollars and tens of thousands of staff from agencies focused on health and safety, such as the FDA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Cuts that are hollowing out longtime federal offices, shedding expertise, and appear to go against Trump's repeated campaign promises to make Americans healthier and safer. We'll let the panel respond to all of this upon our return. We welcome you as well, panel at WAMC.org, as we finish up with our last half hour of time together. So make the best of it. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. With us, former Times Union associate editor, or associate editor, as we say in the States, Mike Spain, senior fellow at the Bard Center for Civic Engagement, Jim Ketterer, and political consultant and lobbyist, Libby Post. We welcome your letters as well, panel at WAMC.org. Just before the news break, we were talking about, and I read a snippet from an article from the Washington Post on worries growing over risks to Americans as Trump cuts health and safety agencies. Who would like to lead us off on this?
But I was noticing that just last week, ProPublica, which is a very reputable independent news source, not-for-profit, did a study of Abbott Labs, which is the one where the infant formula issue developed back in 2022, the crisis. And it was basically because they were not using sanitary practices. And they went and talked to a lot of employees at Abbott Labs, and they've drifted back to that. There's a lot of lackadaisical following of cleaning and checking equipment and testing for bacteria. And that's how we got into that mess. And it's only because of government inspectors that companies maintain, you know, these standards, because they know if the inspector comes in and finds a problem, they'll shut them down like they eventually did with Abbott Labs. And so if you're going to have fewer inspectors who are just targeted, it sounds to me like strategic and targeted is what the DOGE people are saying that the inspectors will be, but they won't be. They'll be fewer and far between. That's a euphemism for strategic and targeted is a euphemism for fewer and far between, you know? I mean, it's just going to be infant formula crisis all over the place.
Meat.
Right.
Whatever we eat.
And you right. wonder how the bird flu thing happened.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. right. I mean, you wonder how COVID happened. I mean, let's be honest here. You know,
I don't know, actually, but
yeah,
I know. Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, it happened on his watch. We can't forget that. All those deaths are on his head, as far as I'm concerned, because he didn't really take it seriously enough and didn't listen to the people who knew. And they are now, you know, getting rid of all the experts, all the doctors, all the people who know what science, how important science is. And
I just want to add into this, too. I mean, the one that when we talk about health, I'm just going to throw this in. But the shuttering of the office on sexually transmitted disease
right,
is
right.
the other one that went down. And so the federal lab that tracked STIs has been shut down, and they no longer have an agency that is keeping tabs on
that.
Sexually transmitted diseases.
So couple that with the Republicans' desire to outlaw contraception, right?
Well, I don't think all Republicans want to outlaw contraception.
But
there is a conservative cohort.
Yes,
that is,
there is a movement.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think it'll happen, but there is a movement of these folks who would like to outlaw contraception. You know, I keep going back to the immunizations, because I've done work on this. And the money that he has cut is impacting our local county health departments, right? And those are the folks that make sure that the information about immunizations gets out, especially to people in underserved areas, right? And so, you know, you have to wonder what's going to happen now to the federally qualified health centers like Whitney Young and Hometown Health. I was down at one on Friday, and I was talking to people about it, and they think that because FQHCs have always been a bipartisan thing, that they'll be okay. But then they go, then Trump wants to decimate Medicaid. And that's where the majority of the money for the FQHCs comes from. So it's really, you know, it's a domino effect where they don't care if poor people die. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but they just don't care.
Can I just add one other area where it's of great concern and there's a potential domino effect, and that is the intersection of these health issues and national security issues. Mm-hmm. So the outgoing vaccine chief for the Food and Drug Administration said, among other things, and he was told to either resign or be fired, mm-hmm. that not just because of his departure, but because of the many moves of the administration over the past few weeks, that there has been a great weakening of the programs that are put in place to counter biowarfare from our adversaries. So these are not just, you know, kind of naturally occurring diseases that we need to be protected from, but these are specific initiatives from adversaries that seek to carry out biowarfare against Americans. And he couldn't go into too many details because it is highly, highly classified. But for somebody who's been in that position and of that stature to say, folks, this is a real concern. There are people out there who are looking at the United States and seeing a moment of great weakness. People who have been developing plans to carry out things like biowarfare, and we are weakening our defenses. Mm-hmm. We also, by the way, over the past few days, this is not in the health area, but it interconnects with this. Donald Trump removed the head of the national security, of the NSA. This is the part of our national security establishment that is listening in and paying attention and using high technology. And the advice of one of the MAGA activists, Laura Loomer, he removed this general who's in charge of the NSA for really no other good reason. So if you start to, you know, hollow out our national security institutions, it can also affect what we're talking about now, which is our defenses against incursions against Americans using biowarfare. That really ought to get people's attention, seriously get their attention.
I mean, the one thing is General Howe or General Haw?
Yeah.
I've heard it pronounced both ways,
yeah.
But I believe Haw. General Timothy Haw, who was let go after this meeting with Lisa Loomer, who is a right-wing activist.
Laura, excuse me.
And it goes – I was thinking of this when earlier in the show a listener wrote in and asked, where is Trump getting his financial and tariff information from? Well, we don't know, right? I mean, this is the thing. I think it's we've heard this for years in the Trump orbit that last person who has his ear often is one of the people who is the most powerful. But in this case, to think of that the NSA and these two incredibly important jobs that this man performed has been eradicated because of a conspiracy theorist.
That's yeah. Right. She's a 31-year-old social media right-wing conservative, you know, conspiracy theorist who, among other things, has promoted the idea that 9/11 was an inside job. And she's also been racist against Muslims and other immigrant groups. And Trump had him with her a lot during his election campaign. He took her to Pennsylvania on 9/11 for one of the memorials. I mean, it's baffling how someone like that could have access to Trump, let alone be so influential on him. It's another reason to be frightened.
This characterizes this administration, right? Expertise is not valued at all. Sycophants are what are valued, and she's just another sycophant, a crazy, you know, conspiracy theory.
I'm not sure that she's just a sycophant, you know.
Right? No, but he's.
I think she's influential over him.
Yes. But the thing is that he brings in the sycophants, the people that kiss his butt, right? And then he listens to them, because well, they have to be right if they think I'm great. So, and I think I'm great. And so, yeah, I'll listen to you and, you know, and do what you say to do because, well, it makes sense. And I really didn't want to think that hard about this whole thing. But, gee, thanks for the information, Laura, right? It's Laura, right?
Yeah.
And I'll you know, I'll do what you say because you think I'm the best thing since sliced bread.
And apparently the charge against General Haw is that he was appointed by General Mark Milley.
Right.
That's it.
Right,
it's not a performance.
Trump regards as a traitor.
Right,
right.
Who spoke out against Trump and said
well,
Trump.
Well, Loomer regarded as. I mean, Trump agrees, but that was that was the sales job that Loomer used to have.
He's disloyal.
Removed. Yes,
but experience and expertise matter for a lot in general. One hopes in life, but particularly in these highly sensitive positions. Mm-hmm. You really need to have somebody who knows what they are doing because there are people around the world who would like to see ill come to the United States. They would like to act upon that. And in a moment of chaos and weakness, it is extremely likely they'll try to take advantage of it.
Rock, paper, scissors, I always thought a Bronze Star beat 500,000 likes on Instagram.
Yeah, right.
I guess not.
It's a different world, Joe, don't you know?
Yeah.
I'm painfully aware, Libby.
Yeah,
all right. We'll take a break. We'll come back and finish up with our group this morning. We welcome you. Last call, 1-800-323. No, I'm giving you a number that you shouldn't use and can't use. I don't know why.
Panel at WAMC.org.
Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
There you are, it's just you without me.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Last few minutes with this great group, and we welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to some other stories that we could talk about. We probably have time for one, maybe two. Well, we did talk about the NSA director being fired, and that is rattling lawmakers. But how many times have we read that headline? That it's, you know, it's rattling lawmakers, but then what? Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah,
then
I mean,
what happens as a result of that?
There is a slow growing coalition of some Republican senators who are challenging Trump on some in areas such as this. They include Mitch McConnell, hero of everybody, Rand Paul, you know, who's more libertarian than conservative, I guess, and then you know,
Angus King.
Well, Angus King is independent.
Independent.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, from Maine and Alaska, you have Lisa
Murkowski and Susan Collins.
And Susan Collins in Maine, right? Thanks.
You could take their votes to the bank.
Right. Well,
yeah, right.
But that's enough.
That's enough to swing.
If the Democrats stay, lined up behind Schumer, which is also something that's not an automatic. You know, they can interfere and slow down, and they are pushing back a little bit. But where are all the others? Where's the backbone? You know, I mean, why are they so quiet, and what are they waiting for to step forward and do what they were elected to do?
It's probably going to take a catastrophe to happen, some true catastrophe, to then have people say, oh, how did this possibly happen? Who was asleep at the switch? You know, who did we have in these important positions, whether it's on the domestic side or internationally? It's hard to imagine profiles in courage suddenly becoming the order of the day.
Mitch McConnell said, if decades of experience in uniform isn't enough to lead the NSA, but amateur isolationists can hold senior policy jobs at the Pentagon, then what exactly are the criteria for working on this administration's national security staff? I can't figure it out. I just can't figure it out. That's Mitch McConnell.
I know. I mean, we find ourselves, who have probably been so annoyed and frustrated by Mitch McConnell over the years. At least he's not insane.
But his question, he knows the answer to his question.
Oh, yeah, he does. It's a rhetorical
question. It's loyalty to the main man.
Sycophantry, I think.
Right, or psychophantry, as somebody wrote in. But look. You know, we're headed down the road to fascism here. I mean, it's a scary thing, but that's what he wants to be an authoritarian. He wants to be a dictator. He wants everybody to capitulate to his whims, and he's surrounded himself with yes people, not the best and the brightest. That's for sure. You know, David Havelstam couldn't write that book about this administration, right? And
although that book is a cautionary tale about where the best and the brightest
come
can lead
from,
us,
right?
And where,
yes,
what tragedies they led us into.
Well, but what title would you give the book that describes the qualifications and rank of the people that Trump has filled his administration with?
That's an interesting question. The worst and the dumbest. Or the worst and or the let me think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just
the dimmest maybe.
The fascists among us. I think that's the name of the book.
I just want to Laura Loomer, just a little background, went to Mount Holyoke in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I don't know if she graduated.
One semester.
One semester.
and left and felt targeted for being a conservative. She transferred to Barry University in Miami Shores, Florida, and graduated in 2015 with a bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism. She worked for Project Veritas, The Geller Report, Rebel News, and InfoWars. She gained notoriety as a result of being banned from numerous social media platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. She also has been banned and removed from events and had press credentials revoked for harassment and causing disturbances. In April of 2023, Donald Trump sought to hire Loomer for his presidential campaign, but his senior campaign advisors successfully discouraged Trump from doing so. By September 2024, some Trump supporters and others had expressed concern about Loomer's continuing presence around and influence on Trump. And then comes this report about her influence in getting Trump to fire over a half dozen national security officials due to Loomer's suspicion that they were disloyal to Trump.
She also ran for Congress and lost, I think.
In Florida, the 19th? I don't remember what district it was. But yes.
Yeah, it is a mystery. I remember that talk during the campaign when Trump was, she was getting off the planes, you know, right behind Trump when he would go around to campaign stops. And people were saying, that's not a good look. That's not a good look. And they kind of pushed her aside. But she must have some connection to him that it makes her very influential.
And, you know, so we were talking about the head of the National Security Agency and the U.S. Cyber Command who was removed. But the others that you mentioned, Joe, were staffers at the National Security Council, which is at the White House. And the National Security Council, one of their functions is to be coordinating all these, you know, highest priority issues with the, you know, the many agencies of the U.S. government. It's a complex system, and this is supposed to, you know, be the traffic cop. The second function is to give unvarnished, honest assessment of things and advice to the president on national security issues. And so if you feel like you can't do that in that position, these are people who had already been vetted by the Trump administration to be in those positions, and even in that case, they're fired. You're not going to be able to freely give serious and unvarnished advice to the president on these, you know, high priority issues. And so, you know, why even have an NSC? You're just going to have a chorus of people saying yes, yes, sir.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. They're all yes men.
But a lot of these national security advisors, aren't they ordinarily, they go from administration to administration. Mm-hmm. They're not particularly connected to a political alignment.
Well, that's one thing that this administration pushed back against.
Yeah.
So many of the people, I worked at the National Security Council, many of the people who are staffers there are on loan, seconded from other agencies, so from the Pentagon, from the State Department, from the intelligence agencies, and they do a tour there. Some were there from USAID, which no longer exists. And so you have this expertise coming across from across many different agencies in the government. And, you know, these are, as you said, Mike, you know, these are long-serving government staffers who work for administrations of both parties. The administration pushed back against that, removed a lot of those people, said that they didn't trust them, that they weren't loyal, they were part of the deep state, and they put many, many of their own people in them, in those positions. And so I'm not sure which version of these people who were removed on Laura Loomer's advice, whether they were on loan from other agencies or they were recent appointees. But in any case, you know, if you send that kind of chilling message, you can't speak up. You can't speak the truth. You can't say what's really going on with issue X, Y, or Z. That's incredibly mm-hmm. dangerous.
Well, the Joint Chiefs is another example.
Yeah.
He's politicizing them, and they have been, since it was established, non-political. They were there to protect the country, and that's it. And
that's what the whole military is supposed
right,
to be.
Right, right. He's politicized them. You know, the guy who was the chair was let go because, oh, he's just a DEI hire. I mean, you know, this is what we're dealing with.
Meanwhile, she has described herself as being a pro-white nationalist and a proud Islamophobe, repeatedly making anti-Muslim statements. One of her most popular stunts, when I say popular, has gotten the most news coverage. was part of a Project Veritas stunt where she went to a polling station dressed in a burqa and asked for a ballot under the name of Huma Abedin.
Oh, my God. You have to wonder.
The defense rests.
Yeah. You just have to wonder how people get there. You know what I mean? How somebody gets to that point of believing this stuff.
Well, she may come back. She's only 31.
I don't think we want her back. I mean, that's part of it. But you just have to wonder how people get there. What is it in their lives that led them to this?
Well, and I do think that not to dismiss her and free her of all her
stuff,
maybe sins, but there are a lot of people who are on the far right. There are a lot of people who believe a lot of stuff. That's one thing. To then get the ear of the President of the United States and have them take action as a result of that.
Within hours.
Right.
Seems to be the larger issue.
Yes.
Here.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. You all are wonderful. And Mike and Jim and Libby, thank you. We'll be back right after this.